Good morning, and welcome to Unifin's second quarter 2020 conference call results conference. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the presentation, we will provide instructions on the Q&A process and open the line to potential questions. For opening remarks and introductions, I would like to turn the call over to Mr. David Pernas, Head of Corporate Finance and Investor Relations at Unifin. Mr. Pernas, you may begin.
Good morning to everyone. Given the current unprecedented macroeconomic environment, we're very much aware of the relevance of this quarter's results. Because of this, we would like to address how we have strengthened and positioned the company's business model to face the rest of 2020 and the upcoming years. As always, we seek to transparently communicate our plans and results while addressing relevant topics. Therefore, we would like to start the presentation by providing a business overview, then give our COVID-19 update, and finally, share our financial highlights for the quarter. After our presentation, we will follow with our usual Q&A. If you have not received a copy of the earnings release, please contact the investor relations team. You will also find a copy of this document on our website, including a direct link to today's webcast. I want to remind you that forward-looking statements may be made during this conference call. These do not necessarily consider changing economic circumstances, industry conditions, the company's performance, or financial results. These forward-looking statements are based on several assumptions and factors that could change, causing actual results to differ materially from current expectations. Therefore, we ask you to refer to our disclaimer located in the earnings release report and the corporate presentation before making any investment decision. Thank you all. Now, I would like to turn over the call to our CEO, Sergio Camacho. Please go ahead, Sergio.
Thank you, David. Good morning to everyone. Once again, thank you for joining us. In these challenging times, we appreciate your time and interest in Unifin. To understand Unifin's plan to address the current economic crisis and to be able to explain our long-term strategy, we believe it is essential to start the conversation by discussing our key underpinning pillars. These pillars are the basis of our values and principles, which constitute the essence of our success story. Unifin is a leading non-banking financial institution that has risen above its competitors and has taken advantage of an efficient sector for the past 27 years. Through these years, Unifin's client-centric business model has proven to be highly adaptable and resilient, and its platform has reached a 16% market share of the total SME loan portfolio. During the past four years, our total loan portfolio showed a compounded annual growth rate of 33.2%. All these characteristics, along with our self-reinforcing ecosystem and diversified product platform, allow us to cover the SME sector widely. Our strategy is to continue penetrating the underserved SME financing markets. SMEs account for nine out of 10 businesses in Mexico, half of the country GDP, and two-thirds of the Mexican job market. In the country, only 14% of this market is served, and we are convinced that Unifin can make a difference with its product offering. Although the upcoming months will still carry the consequences of the economic downturn caused by the lockdown measures, there are still many opportunities going forward. Unifin targets addressable market of 240,000 SMEs, holds a broad base of unattended prospects representing an attractive expansion potential for the company. To address this potential market, we made relevant adjustments to our commercial approach. We expanded our distribution channels, refocused our advisor teams, and aligned our strategy to size the sector opportunities. We not only conducted commercial adjustments, but we also did our homework to identify the sectors and states that, in our view, are expected to overcome the current crisis faster. Healthcare retail, agriculture, media, e-commerce, financial services, and wholesale and retail are some well-screened sectors where we have spot opportunities to increase our client base and expand our loan portfolio. Additionally, we have a significant presence in states with expected growth potential above Mexico's 2020 expected GDP growth. These provide us with a competitive edge to react faster to potential client needs as soon as the economy in these states recovers. It is important to mention that around 25% of our clients have exposure to the new trade agreement with the U.S. and Canada supply chain. These companies are expected to recover faster vis-a-vis the national average in the following years. In addition to reviewing opportunities from an economic standpoint, we have also realigned our customer-centric strategy by enhancing our product lineup with complementary services to reduce our customer acquisition costs, increase our addressable target market, and accelerate financing for the SMEs. We fully comprehend the core value of CapEx financing for an emerging economy. However, to develop our client's potential, we have expanded our product offering to move across our capital structure and design a complementary lineup of products that effectively lever on our one-stop shop philosophy. There is between a 5 to 20% probability of closing a new customer from initial contact. However, the probability rises drastically to 60 to 70% if we conduct cross-selling and upselling sales to existing customers. Only with a broader product portfolio, we will be able to increase our client's financial capabilities by enhancing the value of our offering and reducing the acquisition cost to reach clients. Cross and upselling explain why, aside from our core, we have expanded our legacy products to the following financial solutions: working capital access, secured and unsecured loans, business scaling options, structure finance, leasing, full service leasing, commercial vehicle financing, and insurance services. We have also expanded our go-to-market strategy to the lower SME segment with introduction of UniClick. UniClick is our new digital platform that seeks to become an entry point to a significantly broader and more dynamic SME market. Also, it is our product incubator. The platform is a new way to engage customers faster at a substantial lower cost, having achieved an acquisition cost reduction of 8.3 times versus Unifin's overall cost. UniClick's unique platform is backed by Unifin's 27 years of experience and a nationwide digital presence with physical branches in 18 different states. Our platform has state-of-the-art technology, including big data analytics, artificial intelligence capabilities, and an in-house platform that serves as a data source from its core financial services. The goal is to offer innovative digital financial solutions to the dynamic SME segment, which has historically been underserved by traditional banks, but much faster at a lower cost. Furthermore, the platform expects to contribute to Unifin's one-stop-shop strategy while leveraging cross-selling opportunities with existing and new clients. Unifin has recently formalized a strategic partnership with Google to create a unique in Mexico digital accelerator. This program includes tools for our clients to speed up their digital awareness and transformation. Most small companies in Mexico do not have a website, presenting an opportunity for those who provide advisory services, which as we are creating in alliance with Google. Thanks to Google's extensive experience and data, we will provide our clients with an estimated of their brand presence according to their geographical position, target customers, and type of product or service they offer. Our clients will be able to track their online business in detail, allowing them to base their decision-making process on real-time data. Our key objective is to become the leading platform that offers innovative digital financial solutions and business services to the dynamic SME segment. With this partnership, we intend to propel UniClick digital platform growth and enable a provision of pinpoint financial solutions for the lower SME mass market. With that, we would like to move on to our COVID-19 update. We would like to begin by mentioning the initiatives we have adopted to keep our people safe. They are the main asset of Unifin, and for that reason, we have prioritized our safety through the pandemic. The company has provided the tools necessary to allow employees to work from the home effectively. In addition to work tools, we now offer additional benefits such as online medical consultations, high-quality insurance, psychological assistance, and have created a back-to-the-office rollout plan. This plan includes designating areas that will work from home to the foreseeable future. In relation to our clients, to assess the impact of COVID and the lockdown on our portfolio, we proactively reach out to our entire client base to evaluate their situation. This effort gave us essential decision-driving information that allow us to create a framework to address individual needs and help our clients weather the crisis. This framework includes evaluating individual risk assessments, sector outlook, and client performance. Our support plan consists mostly of payment relief, allowing clients to defer payments by 3 to 4 months to help them maintain vital liquidity. Through this plan, we provided relief to about 12% of our client portfolio. On this page, you can see some additional details regarding our client support plan. 1,200 clients, which represent 15.5% of our total client base as for number of clients and 12.7% of our total portfolio as a percentage of outstanding balance. We would like to highlight here that despite having around 1,200 customers requesting relief, they are concentrated in the high-growth states of Mexico City, States of Mexico, Querétaro, Guanajuato, and Nuevo León. Our strong financial position enabled us to create this client support plan, and despite these headwinds, we maintain a long-term business view to continue creating value for our clients and shareholders. Before we start discussing our quarter results, we would like to highlight that some of these quarter most significant achievements. Considering our positive cash flow and following our conservative cash management policies, the company decided to use excess cash proceeds to buy back some of its outstanding market debt in a face value amount of $26.1 million. Consequently, our financial results present a positive gain due to the cancellation of the notes purchased at discount price. As part of its natural course of business, we confirm the company has successfully rolled over 12 billion pesos in outstanding debt corresponding to revolving facilities from our different commercial and development banking relationships. In addition to maintaining the outstanding balance with our creditors, and according to our strong financial position and exceptional track record, the company has signed 3 new credit facilities. The increase of our Nafin Bancomex credit facility for a total amount of 6.2 billion pesos, of which 2.7 billion is incremental capacity. A new credit line with a local commercial bank amounting up to 5 billion pesos, and we successfully refinanced $70 million facility with Barclays. We are also in the process of closing the refinancing of $300 million related to market securitizations that are currently under an amortizing schedule. Finally, at the annual shareholders meeting, we approve a capital increase of up to 2.5 billion pesos. This capital increase will be conducted through the issuance of up to 140 million shares. Current shareholders will have preferential subscription rights to the new shares in proportion to their participation in the company capital stock, thereby avoiding dilution. We expect the transaction to be completed by mid-late August. Early today, we received the approval from the Banking and Security Commission to commence the rights offering process. The offering of these new shares will improve Unifin capital and liquidity ratios and put the company in a stronger position to support its clients in this challenging economic period. As mentioned before, we believe that as Mexico emerges from the COVID pandemic, there will be attractive opportunities in lending to the Mexican SME, and we want to be well prepared for when that moment comes. As a consequence of these reliable managerial decisions and the company's sound financial positions, all of the credit ratings were reaffirmed during the quarter, including those related to outstanding public and private lease securitizations. Moving on to our operational highlights, despite the crisis, year-over-year originations increased the total loan portfolio by 26.7% compared to the first semester of last year, reaching 63.8 billion pesos. Of the total loan portfolio, leasing continues to account for the largest share at 47.7 billion pesos, with factoring at 2.3 billion and auto and other loans at 13.8 billion pesos. The total non-performing loan ratio was 5.7% in the second quarter, compared to 4.3% in the first quarter of this year, affected by the economic slowdown. The loan loss reserve from the quarter increased to 1.9 billion pesos from 962 million pesos in the second quarter of last year. In line with the current challenging economic conditions and the company's strategy for the COVID pandemic, these provisions are created according to our loan loss reserve policy attached to the guidelines defined by IFRS. The methodology is based on an expected loss basis. The factors used to determine expected loss provisions for the leasing portfolio are historic payment behavior, current environment, and reasonable provision for future payments. The recovery value of the lease assets that are 90 days past due was 2.9 billion pesos in the second quarter. The estimated break-even value of these assets was 63%, as shown in the table below. It is important to highlight that Unifin's current loan loss reserve contains sufficient capital to account for potential losses. Historically, the company has sold its repossessed assets at approximately 80% of their recovery value. The capitalization ratio for the period was 18%, while the financial leverage ratio was 5.5 times, affected by the volatility of the Mexican peso. Excluding mark-to-market valuations from our capitalization and leverage ratios, capitalization from the quarter was 20.4%, while the leverage ratio stood at 4.9 times. This is significant because, given accounting criteria, our financial assets and liabilities denominated in U.S. dollars present variations as rates and the FX move, hence, virtually offsetting our accounting capital position in our capitalization and leverage metrics. The financial liabilities for the first 6 months of the year were 74.4 billion pesos, an increase of 37.9% compared to the same period last year, mainly attributed to portfolio growth. The weighted average term of the liabilities was 43 months versus 30 months for the total portfolio, thus presenting a healthy gap between maturities and easing potential cash flow pressures. Our debt is most U.S. dollar denominated, having 71% of the total outstanding balance in that currency. It is important to highlight that all of our U.S. dollar denominated debt is completely hedged. Additionally, 80% of our debt is at fixed rates, while variable rate debt amounts to 20% of the outstanding balance. During the quarter, the weighted average funding cost decreased to 9.9% due to quantitative easing policies and strategic financing activities conducted over the last 12 months. Interest costs have been falling on a sequential basis since the second half of 2019 due to lower costs associated with new funding agreements and Banxico's easing cycle. We ended the second quarter with a growth in interest income of 7% versus the same period last year. Interest costs increased by 2% to 1.7 billion pesos, explained by an increase in financial liabilities related to our operational growth. The financial margin from the quarter increased by 16.6% compared to the second quarter, reaching 1.1 billion pesos. This improvement comes from higher interest income from our different business lines and limiting our interest costs during the quarter. As a result, the financial margin as a percentage of sales was 38.1% in the second quarter of this year. However, the annualized NIM contracted 70 basis points to 7.1% in the second quarter versus the second quarter of last year, explained by the deceleration of our business due to current economic conditions. As mentioned earlier, the loan loss reserve portfolio from the second quarter increased by 20 times to 628 million pesos, consistent with the current market conditions and the company's strategy for the COVID pandemic. As a result, the adjusted financial margin closed at 440 million. A decrease of 50% compared to the same quarter of last year. Administrative expenses consisting of investments in marketing and promotion, administrative services, legal, and professional fees increased by 5.5% compared to the second quarter of last year, reaching 372 million pesos. This increase is mainly attributable to the company's substantial efforts related to our business intelligence and uniquely business branches. However, OPEX as a percentage of sales improved by 20 bps in the second quarter to 13.3% from 13.5% in the second quarter of last year. Moving on to the financial metrics, the return on assets stood at 2.2%. The return on equity was 17.1%, but adjusting for the perpetual bond, the return on equity closed at 29%. The financing results for the quarter reported a net gain of 307 million pesos, mainly explained by two factors. Unwinds related to the repurchase and cancellation of notes in face value amount of $26.1 million, and adjustments made to some of our hedging derivatives by taking advantage of the positive mark-to-market valuation due to FX and rate variations throughout the year. It is important to highlight that despite some opportunistic strikes in our derivatives portfolio, all of our debt continues to be fully hedged in principal and interest up to maturity. The consolidated net income for the quarter fell by 42.3%, closed at 261 million pesos for the quarter, compared to 453 million in the second quarter of 2019, primarily attributed to the creation of loan loss reserves as a result of implementing risk-related strategies in response to the current global situation and lower origination volumes across our business lines. Always, I would like to reiterate our commitment to Mexico and our stakeholders. We will continue focusing on generating long-term value and overcoming this crisis. We are confident that we will emerge as a stronger company. Thank you for listening, and now I would like to open the Q&A session.
Ladies and gentlemen, we will now have our Q&A session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate that your line is in the question queue. For those using speaker equipment, it may be necessary for you to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. One moment, please, while we now poll for questions. Our first question comes from Carlos Rivera with Double Line. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, thanks a lot for taking my questions. The first one is related to asset quality. I mean, we saw a pretty big increase in the loan loss provisions in the P&L. So given that you follow IFRS, I wanted to have your thoughts about the outlook for this line in the following quarters. You mentioned that this provision covers some of the expected losses also for the future. So what are you expecting for this line? I'm probably also making the question a bit more precise. Of course, we're seeing a deterioration in NPLs, but also a portion of your portfolio is receiving some support measures and is not reflected on the NPL. So are these provisions also accounting for that part of the portfolio that is receiving some support but is not reflected on the NPL ratio? And I'll have a second question on the non-recurring gains after. Thank you.
Hi, Carlos. If we analyze the performance of the portfolio regarding both the payment that we receive from our clients, but also the request from support on the COVID plan, what I can tell you is that over the last 2 months, May and June, we saw a complete flattening on the curve on request from support from our clients. So going forward, we do not anticipate a further deterioration on our NPL ratio. It is really difficult now to provide with an exact outlook on that because nobody knows exactly when this is going to be ending. But based on our recent experience, it's what I can tell. On the NPLs are included within the 5.7 and the COVID programs, it's partially included there.
The allowances, Carlos, as you know, the methodology consists of analyzing and reviewing the entire portfolio of the company on an expected loss basis. Of course, it considers the aging balances of the company. You know, it also includes the severity of the loss, and it analyzes, of course, the guarantees and the collateral of the portfolio. So the assessment is done to the entire book. It does have a portion that would account for the restructured portion of the book, but it's mostly related to the clients that are already reported as an NPL. No.
Okay, so if you're seeing a flattening on the requests for support, and of course without getting into a very specific number, but then probably the loan loss provisions, we should not expect such a big increase in the following quarters. Maybe can we say that the worst as measured as a cost of risk or something like that is behind? And I understand it depends on the outlook for the economy. So if you could also share the GDP assumption or the measure that it's this projection based on, what is your thinking for the Mexican economy at the moment?
I fully agree with what you said. What we have, going backward, late last year, when we start to see the declining in the economic outlook for the country, we saw and we analyzed within the company which sectors may be the ones who, no matter what the public policies of the country were the sectors that somehow could have an independent dynamics, no, from the macro. And that's why we start doing a lot of our origination, so basically focusing and targeting clients that are included within the production line to export to the U.S., thinking of the ratification of the new NAFTA. And as of today, around 25% of that goes into that. So basically, on one quarter of our portfolio, it's gonna react immediately, and actually, it's already reacting. On the macro or GDP perspective for the year, we basically go with the public estimations that the IMF and some other analysts are out there. However, we have go into a second derivative analysis, getting into which states and which industries may be more benefited or less affected, let me put it that way, on the macro situation. And that's how we're moving all of our commercial efforts. So no matter what the outcome for the GDP growth for Mexico for the year is, we believe that as long as we start seeing some sectors recovering, we are going to perform well.
Okay, the numbers from GDP the overall in Mexico, and I understand the subtleties for industries, are those projections around contraction of 10 to 11%?
Yes, 9 to 10%, and that's basically the premises or in which we're working, our budgets and our plans.
Okay, great. And my second question is related to the non-recurring things, the gains that you've had, and there are a few numbers that are mentioned in the press release. From the purchase of the bonds. One is 307 million, and there's another 134 million. So if you could clarify which one relates to what are those pre-tax numbers? Is one just related to the difference in prices? And on the hedges, you mentioned in the text, but there are some adjustments that were made to those hedges. So does that mean that you close some positions and then do you reopen them, or what was going on the hedging side of your derivatives? Thanks.
Yeah. So basically, what happened, Carlos, was that because of the repurchases of the bonds, so it's two explanations. Okay. The first one is because of the repurchases of the bonds. The company took an advantage of the performance of the bond, given the overall sentiment, no? and we decided to buy at a discounted price. No, as you know, at some point the bonds were even trading at 40 cents on the dollar. No, and that of course led us to define a strategy for repurchases. We bought $26.1 million dollars in face value, and of course, because there was a portion of the bonds that was hedged in accordance to that face value, we were allowed to do an entire unwind for that position because the hedge didn't make sense anymore. No, we were over hedged, so that presented a gain. In addition to that, because of the significant depreciation of the Mexican peso throughout the year, we had, and because our hedges were done at different rates, the overall mark to market of our hedges had a substantial valuation, a substantial gain. So the company decided to restrike those positions basically by trying to control entirely the amount of interest that we were going to be paying, no? So there's no change in the previous rates that we had before to the ones that we have right now, because we have a benefit from the easing cycle of Banxico's rates. So we somewhat offset the benefit that we took from the government's policies or the central bank's policies for that, and decided to do some recouponings on the hedges, and that allowed us to present an additional gain from that from those changes on the hedges. No, the overall gain was $134 million from the repurchase of the bonds, and then from the unwinds or restructuring of the derivatives altogether. No, the portion that was directly benefiting the result from the repurchase was done or represents the $134 million. The other one is mostly because of the currency effect, no?
Okay. Are those figures after tax, the ones that you share, or pre-tax?
They are pre-tax, both.
Okay. All right. Great. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Jason Mullen with Scotiabank. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, thanks for the opportunity to ask questions and the presentation. Can you talk about how you're helping your clients in terms of providing forbearance, the type of loan rescheduling, the percentage of clients that are participating in these programs, and how that's impacting your business today, and what you think the impact will be when these forbearance initiatives have terminated? Thank you.
Of course, Jason. The information will be or is available on our webpage in the presentation of the webcast, and merely discussed on the call, but just to be able to remind you all about the numbers. So the total applications, the total support plan that was granted to the clients was in an amount of 1,206 clients. Okay, that's the total, incorporating all of the product offerings that the company has today. And the outstanding balance, the full outstanding balance of that portfolio for those clients in particular, amounts for 8 billion pesos in general terms. The amount of the program, so the 3 to 4 rentals, accounts for around $1.2 billion dollars individually. The restructures amount for those. It's just the amount of the 3 to 4 rentals. Also we define different strategies and different approach depending on the product that the client has, and of course on the overall analysis that we did on an individual basis to each specific client. The reliefs were basically signed through the months of March, April, and May, most of them. I think we received one application or a couple of applications through June. And the relief program started for those clients when we signed those agreements, those, say, restructures. And it also depended on how we addressed the issue individually with the clients in the means of when were they going to start repaying us. In most cases, some of that started in July. But in other cases was towards the end of this year, particularly October and November. And in another portion of the clients, because of how severe the conditions were under individual circumstances, it was sent all the way back or all the way at the end of the contract, of the maturity. No?
Let me add, Jason, that basically what we did, we made an individual risk assessment of each client, including the sector outlook and the client performance. All of the support that we provide to the clients were for clients that were good payers, and that's very important. And the other thing to highlight is that basically, in most of the cases, we got some additional guarantees to protect ourselves.
And the application,
go ahead, please.
Sorry. No, the application, I'm just going to give a quick breakdown for anyone that doesn't have the presentation available there. But basically, the breakdown per client is 59% focused on leasing clients, 29% on auto lending, 3% on factoring, and 10% on Uniclick's portfolio. And then by product or outstanding balance, it was 87% in leasing, 8% in auto lending, 4% in factoring, and 1% in Uniclick.
So if I'm reading correctly, as of June 2020, you had approximately 5,193 clients in leasing, the vast majority of your clients, right? I guess I see here 900 in factoring and about 1,200 in auto loans. So the majority of these 1,200 are, and then you gave the balance numbers. I got it. That's interesting. And I guess since it's just, you know, it's pretty new, are you getting a sense, do you have a sense of how those clients that have taken this opportunity to restructure, like how is that going and in terms of payments, and then how would you compare that to the payments on those that did not participate? Are they going as they were going before, or the delinquency is weaker, or for that matter, better? Who knows?
It has been very clear, Jason, that from the clients who are in sectors that basically they already open for business, or states that are already open for business, or clients that are, as I said, within the supply chain to the U.S., the back to normality has been very, very quickly. However, there's also another portion of clients which are in sectors that continue to be closed that are basically still suffering on that. So for the numbers that we are presenting here, we may continue to present some in the third quarter in which we continue to support because of the pandemic, basically. No.
Okay. Thank you. Very helpful.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Joe Kogan with Scotiabank. Please proceed with your question.
Hello, and thank you for the call. I had a couple of questions on recovery rates and on NPLs. First, on the recovery, you have this nice slide with some break-evens. I just want to make sure I understand the slide. So I remember your structure of your loans is to have a low residual, which gives you kind of a larger buffer. So when you say 100% and a historical recovery of 80%, this is 80% of what? And I guess the kind of the more important question is, have you actually sold a lot of assets over the past few months, and what has been the process of trying to sell those assets, and what have you been able to get from them? Or is it more recovery on the loan in some other way here? And then on NPLs, if I understood correctly, you have about 20% of the leasing portfolio that's more than 30 days due, and in addition, you have 11% that's restructured. So I should think about it as about 30% of SMEs are having trouble with payments. So I just wanted to make sure I understood that part. And then kind of going forward, you mentioned the flattening of the curve, and I see 6% in the 31 to 60 bucket and 7.5% to the 61 to 90 bucket. I mean, do you expect any of those to become NPLs? I mean, am I thinking about it correctly that some of these SMEs had low cash buffers, were able to pay for a couple of months, but if they're still closed, we'll see NPLs increasing, or are you saying they're going to stay constant at 7% here?
Well, first of all, I mean, on the 80% that we provide on the explanation, it's basically 80% of the commercial value of the asset. Yeah, so it's where is the commercial value? We are selling around 80%. That's a historical trend. And the breakdown that we provide on our press release and all the information that is provided there, it has a commercial value, but basically considering now how the commercial value that is in the market, which somehow has already been impacted or negatively impacted by the COVID crisis. As we said, I mean, and of course, we are very focused on the aging balances of our clients. There might be some of them that will go over 90 days and then enter into the NPL methodology and the reserves and so forth, so on. However, all of our efforts are dedicated towards collecting money from these guys and trying to get them on back on business. It is really interesting that, for example, even though we provide some programs to some of our clients, some of them were not willing to sign them because they have a different view on how does the economy is going to evolve and how does the economy is going to perform. And those, some of those are already included into the 5.7%. So it's going to be a dynamic, but my point or what we try to explain here is that the flattening of the curve over the last 2 months somehow show us some stability towards the evolution of our NPL numbers.
Okay, I understand the goal on the NPLs. And as far as the recoveries, I mean, have you actually had to repossess any assets during the pandemic? And if so, what has that process been?
Maybe around 10 clients, which we have already repossessed, because somehow some of them are going to be out of business. And prior to entering into a legal issue, they decided to give back the assets to us, but it's a very, very, very small amount in a percentage. The people that enter into these programs is because they are intending or they're planning to get back on business. And of course, getting back into our origination process, in which the asset is a core of the enterprise that we are providing leasing, I mean, we are not asking for the asset, and they are not offering the asset to us. So basically, it's a standstill. Let me put it that way.
And were you able to realize a reasonable market value for those assets, kind of in line with what you would have expected in a normal period?
It is, yes, but in a different way, because some of the assets that we have already repossessed have been already allocated to different clients, that they were in the need somehow of similar assets. So, and that's part of all of our commercial strategy and our business intelligence efforts within the company, which basically, once that we are aware that we're going to repossess an asset, it already gets into our data warehouses and everything, and our commercial guys know that there's an asset with a specific conditions that is going to get back to Unifin, and they start basically marketing that asset, not to their existing clients or to new clients or whatever the case is.
Okay, understood. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Nicholas Riva with Bank of America. Please proceed with your question.
Yeah, thanks very much for taking my questions. I have three questions. The first one on the capital increase that you mentioned then, the idea in terms of timing would be to do it in August, mid to late August. I just wanted to confirm that the commitment from the controlling shareholder is to contribute with his share, so about 58% of the 2.5 billion pesos. So that would be my first question. The second question is kind of a follow-up on prior questions on asset quality. So that increase in the NPL ratio, the 140 basis points quarter-on-quarter, if I compare that with other peers in Mexican financials, non-banks and some banks, for some other peers, we haven't seen really an increase in NPL ratio in the quarter-on-quarter because of all the debt relief measures and the fact that the restructured loans are still part of the performing loans. In your case, you said that you have done debt relief measures for about 13% of your loan portfolio. Is all of that still performing? So the increase in NPLs was due to new NPLs, but not due to the restructuring, to the restructured loans, if the question is clear. And then the third question, you mentioned in the press release and in this call about buying back some of your U.S. dollar bonds in the second quarter. Given that in July we saw another decline in bond prices, can you tell us if you also did some of that buying back in the open market in July, or if you plan to do more of that in the third quarter at all? Thank you.
Sure, Nicolas. And let me start the answer of your questions with a very clear differentiation of Unifin vis-a-vis the banks. We own an asset, no? So we do not have an exposure like a bank may have on a loan, because basically we own the asset and we are leasing the asset. So there's some natural underlying there. So basically the nature of our NPL, somehow it's a little bit different. Second, all the banks receive somehow programs to support in the regulatory metrics and everything, and maybe that's why you are seeing a difference. As we are aware, we are not a bank, and therefore we're not subject to those regulatory easings within their accounting or their reporting. So basically, that's the difference that you might see there. I mean, once again, we own an asset, no? We do not need like a fully reserved because we have a real guarantee on each of our leases. Getting to the capital raise, yes, there is the full commitment of our main shareholder and let's say the controlling trust to issue their on a proportional base their part. And the third, on the repurchase of some bonds in the third quarter, I mean, yes, those are opportunities that, of course, we analyze on a daily basis, particularly considering that, in our view, the reduction on the price, it has been more than justified. So yes, I mean, we are also analyzing that as well.
Okay, perfect. And thank you. One quick follow-up. Then just to confirm, the loans that you the leases that you restructured in the second quarter are still part of your performing loan book.
That's correct.
And okay. Nicolas, just to add one more argument to what Sergio was saying, of course, part of the increase of the NPL accounts for clients that, for whatever reason, did at some point or could potentially apply for the program but were not granted the program because of several factors. I mean, there was clients that on their perspective, they didn't have a positive outlook, no? And were already basically facing Chapter 11 sort of processes. And of course, it made no sense to approve a program like that to those type of clients, or some who were unwilling for other sort of purposes, no? The company was very, very, very cautious on who we decided to grant the program to. And the increase in the NPLs accounts for, of course, those clients.
Okay. Thanks very much, David and Sophie.
Thank you. Our next question comes from David LaPierre with Loomis Sayles. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. Are you able to disclose how much availability you have on some of the on your lines of credit? I see the schedule in the back with the maturity dates. Just wondering if you can share how much is available.
Hi, David. Yes. Well, first, and thank you for your question. I think an important remark here, and that was mentioned at some point in the call also, but I would really like to stress out or to highlight that as an important event over the quarter. We did have access, or we did close some facilities with new relationships and with, of course, development banks. No? So we increased our capacity with Nafinsa / Bancomex. They operate together now in an amount of 2.7 billion pesos
of new money.
Of new money, the total amount of the facilities accounts for 6.2 billion pesos. No, so that's an important highlight. So the 2.7 billion pesos is available capacity. Then we have a 5 billion peso facility coming from a local commercial bank. This is a new relationship to the company. We didn't have any direct relationship to that particular bank before. And that amounts for 5 billion pesos in new cash. And last, we did the refinancing of the Barclays deal that has now a maturity sent all the way to the next 12 months, so basically by August 2021. With that, the company continues to do refinancings on both revolving facilities, which is important to highlight because part of our debt accounts for in the bank facilities or in the loans accounts for a natural process of having a revolving structure. It's not that we're changing or we have been changed our conditions from our creditors. It's the way the lines work. We have through the year rolled over around 12 billion pesos of those facilities because some have 90 days, some have 120, some 180. So that creates a lot of rollover of that debt. But the conditions remain the same, and all of our creditors have the same outstanding balance. None of the conditions have been modified for the company. Important item. And then, of course, part of the term facilities that the company has, one of which is the Barclays deal, was already refinanced. So the capacity of the company today in just these facilities amounts for 7.7 billion pesos, okay, in addition to the cash that is locked in the securitization trusts that allows us to retrieve cash by repurchasing some of the rights of the securitization. And that amount will definitely increase now that we are finalizing the revolving structure on those facilities because some of those are already in amortizing period and restrict the cash that is there for the wonderful payment on principal. No? So that will allow or increase the capacity, the cash flow capacity of the business. And sorry, just to finalize the argument, the company has today a cash position in the balance, just in cash, not in investments, just in cash, in an amount of 1.5 billion pesos in addition to that. No? So the cash flow of the company has been very stable. It has worked very well. It was very important for us to give the announcement of these facilities and provide you with the clarity of the access of these new cash. It's not that we will be using the cash immediately. It will not necessarily account for additional leverage because we will use it as originations start increasing and the operational volumes of the company will start rendering some results, but the availability is there, no? So it gives us a lot of maneuvering capabilities.
Great. Thank you, David. That's very helpful. Congratulations on all the work on the credit facilities this quarter.
Thanks.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Alejandro Esaza with Sura. Please proceed with your question.
Yes. Hi, everyone. Thanks for the call. I'm sorry, I had to reconnect to the call, so maybe I didn't hear part of your last answers. My first question is regarding collections. How deep has been the reduction you've seen in collections, and what can we expect for the rest of the year? And second, in terms of non-performing loans, do you expect them to continue worsening above that 5.7% we saw in the second quarter, or should the peak be around that number? Thank you.
Yes. Thank you, Alejandro, for your question. Based on the current situation that we're standing at, I would say that the 5.7% may be one a peak number on our NPLs. The amount of collection from our goal of collection of the month has been stable between 80 to 85% of the goal of collections for each month. So it's consistent with the supports and everything that we have been providing to some customers.
So that reduction has been in the conservative, I mean, it's not been that deep as the scenarios we were talking about in the first quarter.
Yeah, no, yeah. Yes, if you recall on the first quarter conference call, we made stress tests that take up to 50% of our collections. No, and that's the way that we start planning the year. Fortunately, that number has remained, as I said, between 80 to 85%. So it has been a very good management on collection on our side, and of course, somehow provides an implicit support of our credit scorecards and our credit analysis with the clients, and we feel very proud about that.
And to add a little on that, I think a very clear chart where you can look at that amount or how we, in a way, of course, it consists of many other variables and many other things. But just for the sake of providing you with some additional context, if you analyze the maturity profile of our debt vis-a-vis the portfolio, basically we are covered in a substantial amount because of the cash collections that we receive over the course of the next 12 months and in the next even 24, with a positive gap vis-a-vis whatever amount of debt needs to be served. No? Doubling the amounts and so on. So we have a lot of timing of maneuvering, considering how the collections are being accrued on today, vis-a-vis the repayment of debt or vis-a-vis the servicing of debt and other creditors. No, and so that's a very important thing that the company has established over the course of the past four even years. This is an important argument with of course rating agencies, and I think it does highlight the capacity of the company. No?
That's great. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Rodrigo Sanhueca with Pine Ridge Investments. Please proceed with your question.
Hi. Thank you for taking our questions. I have a follow-up on the last two questions, actually. In this part where you told us that 46% of your portfolio is maturing in the next 12 months, are you including your non-performing loans or are you excluding, for example, your over 90 days non-performing loans in this chart? Also, as you mentioned, you already including the 12% of rollovers in this chart. If you can confirm me, that would be great. I have a second question after.
Yes. So as to the first question is of course net or after the restructures that we have to do in our book. So it does consider the modifications on the COVID relief programs and the aging balance. As to the revolving structures, yes, it's also after the rollovers of debt. As I said before, around 8 billion pesos of outstanding debt of the company has a weighted average maturity of 120 days. So you will still see an important amount of those maturities coming due over the course of the next 6 to 12 months, of course. But that debt, in nature, again, will be rolled over. It's not a maturity specifically, no. And the differential would be just term loans or securitizations that are on their amortizing period, which, by the way, have their own specific cash flow, no, because of the collections on the portfolio, among others, no. So the gap is an important one.
But it's also very important, Rodrigo, that we have kept, I will say, a monthly conversation with basically all of our commercial banks and banking relationships, in which we have the implicit commitment to basically roll over everything that is next up to the next 12 months. So we feel very, very comfortable there, no matter what, everything we're getting in addition on additional funding, no?
Okay, perfect. And maybe a quick follow-up on the latter also. Are you expecting to increase your legal fees, cash expenses, administrative expenses? What is your budget on your cash needs in order for you to function for the year?
We're very, 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 very cautious, and it's one of my main priorities to keep an eye and to have a very good track on the OPEX as a percentage of sales. However, yes, as you mentioned, the legal fees have gone up during this pandemic because we need to prepare for the guys that are not going to be willing in either to pay or to get back the assets, and that's part of the ongoing business that we have had over the last 27 years. I do not expect, and our plan does not call for a significant increase in the OPEX. If we analyze over the last 12 months, basically the increase on the OPEX has been more on our digital platform and on investing in our business for being faster and improve our product offerings, no, to all of our clients.
Okay, perfect. And my second question was regarding your leasing portfolio. You usually disclose your number of clients, and I noticed that your originations for this quarter was really low, like lower than three billion Mexican pesos. So I was wondering why your total clients increased from roughly 4,000 to 5,000 on a quarterly basis.
Rodrigo, sorry, the line broke and I wasn't able to hear you properly. Can you repeat your question, please?
Yes. So in the page 11 of your press release, you usually disclose your number of clients, right? So I was wondering why your leasing number of clients increased that much on a quarterly basis.
Give me 1 second, please. I'm looking at the numbers.
Yeah, this I'm asking because it doesn't really. I don't understand because your origination for this quarter was low, or relatively low.
I mean, partially, I would think it of course it's offset by the commercial approach these days on a larger exposure and broader base of clients with a lower average ticket. But please let me follow up with that number because and I'll address that question for you. I think that's the actual answer and the correct one, but I'll review, you know, and get back to you.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Adrian Garcia with Invesco. Please proceed with your question.
Sergio, thanks for the call. My question is relating in terms of like the amounts that you still have to roll over for the rest of the year. I understand a lot of your liabilities are revolving type, but what remains to be done for the rest of the year? That's one. And the second one is on the securitizations that you have outstanding. Correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is that these instruments, you have to maintain a certain number of coverage in those instruments, and if they fall below that, you have to add assets to that. I'm curious what has been that performance and if you've had to add more portfolio to maintain those coverage ratios.
Hi, Adrian. Thank you for your question. The first, I would address the first one. So the amount of debt that remains to be, let's say, rolled over at this point for the rest of the year amounts for $70 million, okay? That accounts for two facilities, a Deutsche Bank facility, and partly the first amortization of the Bladex Nomura syndicated deal that we have available that amounts for $220 million, but is partially being amortized over the course of the next year. So the amount, the net amount is $70 million. However, we are discussing both with Deutsche and both with Bladex and Nomura the likelihood of doing a new agreement that will allow us to, similar to what happened to Barclays, extend the maturity of that. I think the conversations are positive. In most cases, of course, what we were discussing was, let's see how things are evolving and so on, typical things to happen under this current situation. But I think in all transparency and everything, everyone feels in a very strong position about the company today. The capabilities, the additional flexibility or financial capacity that the company is disclosing in this call also would provide a much ease or much ease towards the situation of the company. No, but notwithstanding that, and as previously said, over the first 6 months of the year, no, it's important to consider that those amortizations are already embedded in the stress analysis of the company. So we can make those amortizations regardless of whether we actually do the rollovers or not. Okay, so those are accounted already in that context. And in addition, we're also working with the $300 million facility of securitizations that was discussed that will also provide additional cash flow to build up on that front and be able to address, if any, this situation. No? The expectations of the company are that we will do a rollover of those two facilities in a total amount. No. I don't know if that answers your first question, and if you could please remind me of your second one, I would appreciate it.
Yeah, sorry, on this first one, before going to the next one, what was the you mentioned there's a securitization that is due. How much is that for this 300 million pesos? I didn't catch that.
$300 million.
Okay, that's it. Okay, perfect. No, the second question is around the local securitizations that if I'm not mistaken, you have to maintain a certain coverage, asset coverage ratio, and if that falls under a certain coverage, you have to add more assets to the portfolio to maintain that coverage. I'm curious how has that been that performing and if you've had to add portfolio to those instruments.
Yeah. Since it's a full turbo amortization schedule, what happens is that the waterfall collections, because we're not able to retrieve the excess cash anymore from that, no? So you have an expected amount of cash collections that will be used all to service debt. So what happens is that under the typical amortizing schedule of any security or of any of our securitizations, with the cash collections and the proceeds, what happens is that the over collateralization increases during this period because you're amortizing more debt than what the actual portfolio is there. So that's why the collateralization or the loan to values of these securitizations grow larger in the amortizing period. But that amount or that means that it's also much more inefficient for the company to have those structures there because the collateral grows. So that's specifically the reason why we're trying to do the rollover, because we will then be a lot more efficient in the means of using the collateral of those securitizations. It's not growing because we're putting additional collateral to the structure. It grows because the collateral of the structure itself outgrows the outstanding amount of debt. No? So that's an important question.
Yeah, I understand that, but my question is, suppose that the NPL levels rise in those instruments, so by an increase in the NPLs in those structures, that would reduce the over-collateralization. And my question is, if those are falling below the threshold that you have to maintain, and as such, do you have to contribute more assets to maintain that OC? Does that make sense?
No. Another argument to that would be that all of the rating agencies specifically that analyze the securitizations have reaffirmed the ratings, specifically because it over-collateralizes, it causes the scenario of potential losses of the trust. So there's no need to, there wouldn't be an event of default because with the over-collateralization, it's already solved for the amount of NPLs that could potentially reflect on the trusts, no?
Got it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Our final question comes from Italia Cortier with JP Morgan. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, thank you for taking my question. It's a follow-up question here. The first one is related to your funding, all that you described. This 2.7 extra money that you got from Nafin, just to clarify, this is a credit line like the other that you had before that you have to be rolling over on a on an ongoing basis. This is not like a more longer-term credit line. So that's one question. The second one is also in terms of funding for the second quarter of the year. Are we done with credit lines from development banks, or do you think you can get more from them, or that's it? And if you have anything else apart from the securitizations that you already mentioned, this would be great if you could share. And I have a question on collections as well, but I can ask that after you answer these first questions on funding.
Yes. Hi, Natalia. On our relationship with the development banks, particularly Natinta and Bancomext, as you are aware, there's been a relationship since, I would say, close to 10 years. So we have partnered very well with them. We announced on the first quarter call that we were negotiating with them incremental lines and incremental facilities. These are the number that we provide today is a result of those negotiations that basically start prior to the COVID. So it's based on the excellent relationship that we have with these institutions. The way that these new loans are going to be structured are, I will say, to medium to long term facilities. Now that can be used as a revolving, or it can be used on the best interest of Unifin. Of that number, and this is something that we do not include today, we still have that it's a pre-approved facility with Banobras of 2.2 billion pesos that it's going through their different processes internally on Banobras, and that we expect to have that basically signed in 60 days. And that will be also incremental money. So basically, and trying to make my point very clear, that we have a very good relationship with the development banks in Mexico.
As to the capacity or the profile of the line specifically, yes, it's within similar conditions. It's just incremental capacity. There's no change on those structures. It's a short-term revolving facility also, but the line itself or the agreement has no maturity. No, the line is available for us, no, and the revolvency comes from the same mechanism as we have or before, no, and
it's also important here to mention that we are also working with the development bank for using some guarantees that they can provide to our portfolio, and that of course is something that we're not including in these numbers, that we are working also in that front.
Okay, that's very helpful. Thank you very much. And then my last question would be on collections. You said that collections were around 80 to 85% of the original amount expected. I am actually trying to calculate the number of collections of the quarter, but I am not 100% sure I'm doing the right way. Because I'm getting something around 5 billion, which seems low to me. So, and basically I can say what I'm doing. I'm taking your loan portfolio as of first quarter of this year. I am adding the originations of the quarter, and then I subtract from the final number of your loan portfolio as of 2Q20. So I get like 5 billion. So I don't know if that's the right way to do. The other way would be also the portfolio as of 4Q19, add the origination minus the portfolio as of 2Q20. Or if you have the number and you could provide the number, then it would facilitate everything.
We'll follow up because I don't have the analysis on their what amortizes vis-a-vis the collections. I think I'll provide you with that number so that you can share also with investors following up either today or next week. But I don't get to the same number. I think we have to clarify a little bit more that amount.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Rafael Buerva with Santander. Please proceed with your question.
Hello, Sergio and David. The outstanding balance of the clients that you've given support or restructuring is 8 billion pesos. And you mentioned you're getting some additional guarantees from these clients. So I wanted to have an idea of the size of those guarantees and if that has been a condition in order to provide some support to get additional guarantees. Thank you.
Hi, Rafael. Yes, I mean, depending on the sector, and once again, I mean, we go through a very in-depth analysis on case by case. So in the sectors or the clients that we felt that they were more exposed to either the pandemic or the macro, we decided to ask for additional guarantees. Basically, the overall, on 40% of our clients that participate in this COVID support or program, 40% of them we were requested to provide with additional guarantees.
Okay, and the size of those guarantees, are we able to know that?
I don't have that number here, but I will get back to you on that.
Great. Thank you, Sergio.
Thank you.
Thank you. There are no further questions at this time. I'd like to turn the floor back over to management for any closing remarks you may have.
Well, thank you very much for being with us today. As we said through the call, we remain confident on our business model. We remain confident on the performance of most of our clients, because we have a very strong conviction on Mexico. So we will keep you posted on everything new that is going on within the company. But one of the things that we want to point out here is that we have very good perspectives based on our digital platform and everything that we have done with Google and so forth, so on that front, but also because even though the size of the situation in Mexico or the deterioration of the macro conditions have been very, very, very high, we have been able to somehow control or have a very strong and well-prepared damage control. So we are very, very confident that we will remain as strong as ever and that the outlook on the medium and long term for the company is very, very positive. So once again, thank you very much for being with us today. And David at his team is going to be available if you want a follow-up question. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes today's webcast. You may now disconnect your lines at this time. Thank you for your participation and have a great day.